RSB Radio with Robert Scott Bell.
You are listening to the Robert Scott Bell Show.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
All right, back at it here. 2 hours a day, 6 days a week, broadcast media. This is the 23rd year. In fact, I will just do a shout out to my good buddy, Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, because it was Groundhog Day 2011, where the Robert Scott Bell Show went from 1 day a week, as it had been prior, I don't know, at the 12 years at that point, to 6 days a week. And we've never stopped. We've never looked back 6 days a week since that point in time. So I don't know what day of the week Groundhog Day is this year, Super Don, but I might have to reach out to Mike for a special appearance all these years later. It'll be an anniversary of its own, right? But anyway, this hour we've got a new guest. It's like, I feel bad because this is someone who we've actually quoted many times. We've referenced her books and articles, and it's like, she hasn't been on the show. It's like, what's wrong with us, Super Don? What's wrong with us?
We didn't have Kevin helping us.
That's true. It's like we have been limping along on one or two or three cylinders, and then we got our buddy Kevin who's helping us to get all the people we want to get interviewed on, and we're cranking it up right now. We're almost to 1,500 guests over the years I've been doing this. So with that, let's bring into the mix, for the first time on the Robert Scott Bell Show ever, 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 it's Jennifer Margulis. Welcome. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thanks for having me, Robert.
It's good to have you finally. You're so patient, I have to say. You're so kind and patient that you would wait all this time, and I didn't get in too much trouble, but we're glad to see your smiling face. I think we got to connect a little bit at Dr. Batar's last advanced medicine conference in South Dakota. Is that right?
Yep, I was there.
That was my memory.
I was doing an interview. You were emceeing, and I was there and did an interview with Jonathan Otto's team for his 10-part documentary series, Vaccine Secrets.
That's right. In fact, Super Don, didn't I send you the link? Because a buddy of mine from Canada said, hey, I just saw you in that thing. That was awesome. I was like, you do these things, Jennifer. And I know you've been interviewed for a lot. Sometimes you don't know that they aired. Well, they ever went. And so we found out that is in there, and you're also featured. So doing such great work over the years. Thank you for all that you're doing in your investigations.
Absolutely. Thank you for all that you're doing and spreading the word about the importance of real, lasting, good health.
Yeah, now you went all the way in on education, up to the PhD level. And the question is, how do you maintain critical thinking skills? Because so much of what we see in academia over the last maybe decades, maybe longer, has been about controlling what you can investigate even. You know, that it isn't what people think. The ideals in science are more overtly coming to the fore. They're not interested in scientific methodology. They only want you to look at certain things. If you look over here, you might lose all of that status and accolades and things like that. What was your experience going through the education you went to get your PhD? And give us some backstory there for our new listeners that don't know you.
Yeah, well, that's actually an excellent question. And I should say I have college age children right now. So I've been thinking a lot about education and the importance of education. And, you know, I came from an incredibly scientific background. My mom was a microbiologist. My dad was an X-ray crystallographer. Both of them had PhDs. And I kind of needed to get a PhD kind of to keep up with the family, to be honest. I have an uncle who won a Nobel Prize in physics. I have another uncle who was the chair of the math department at MIT. And when I was studying, I was absolutely on fire. I love to read. I love to write. I love to talk. And the idea that someone would pay you to do all those things, because, you know, you usually get a stipend or, you know, a salary to go to graduate school, was wonderful to me. But it's absolutely true, Robert, that critical thinking skills, the idea behind a good education is that you should learn to think critically, but the actual execution of education today is to kind of put people in a box and have them all think the same way. But I will say, when I was teaching at the university level, which I did for about 7 years, I was always trying to push my students to think differently and to challenge me and to give, you know, not to just go along with what I said or to believe anything, to actually think for themselves. So I will say that a good education can help you think for yourself. And, you know, hopefully you can get that out of it. And I had to unlearn a lot of what I learned. My PhD is in English. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, you said that. I was like, I remember going through university level, getting my, I call it now a degree, because again, you don't use the sense God may have given you once you get it. Oftentimes, very few people survive it. And I said, you know what? The things I know and have known for years now, decades, in fact, and I've been broadcasting on, were because I had to unlearn first all the things I was indoctrinated to believe about the world around me up to through and through university level. So for me, when somebody says they have a degree, I don't automatically go, oh man, that's awesome. Except I understand what it takes to get there. But my question is, all right, let's see how you're using it. Do you have critical thinking skills or not? I agree. The ideal would be in higher education, deeper levels of critical thinking you would be asked to achieve, right? But that's not always happening. In fact, in the medical realm, it's the last thing they want to have happen. So guiding our children.
That's true. Yeah.
Go ahead.
The thing is that we humans are social creatures and we want to belong and we want to be part of a community. So being part of a community usually means thinking the same way. And that's what happens in academia, is that you get awards and accolades when you go along with what everybody else is going along with and when you choose safe subjects. So mm-hmm. what I learned from, you know, from doing a degree, and my PhD is in English from Emory University. I did a master's degree in comparative literature from UC Berkeley, and I have a BA in Russian and English from Cornell. And what I learned from all of that education is, you know, how to do research and how to think critically. But what I had to unlearn was, you know, sort of groupthink and not kind of going along just to get along and to be safe. And also I had to teach myself how to write. So theoretically I was learning how to write. I was teaching students how to write, but academic writing is not writing, as you know. No one can understand it. No one, you know, it's very turgid and abstruse. And that's the last way that I want to write or speak, for that matter, using big words. But, you know, I want to write things that people want to read, and I want to write in a way that people can understand. So I see myself as a translator. A lot of your listeners may not know who I am, and I'm an investigative health and science journalist. And then I write, you know, magazine articles, newspaper articles, and I write books. So right now I'm working on my 9th book, which should come out next year, except I'm a little behind on the deadline.
Talk about writing. You're a prolific writer. We've got you linked up in the show notes at robertscottbell.com. If you don't know about Jennifer's work, I mean, she including the Vaccine Friendly Plan, working on that with Paul Thomas, who we've had on a number of times, also the Addiction Spectrum. I mean, so many amazing things that you've written about, plus, again, your articles and magazines and different things. Clearly, you survived your education. I was at Emory University. I don't know if we were there at the same time. Again, I survived it and had to unlearn some of the stuff I learned there even. And these are, you know, high-level research education facilities. But as we learned later, that a lot of this was biased based on what? Having a control of what's being investigated and in keeping with people within that box. And so I don't dispute that people aren't smart or intelligent to go through these high-level university trainings. It's just a question of whether they can break free of also the limitations that have been borne about over the centuries now of controlling what I would call even reality, right? In terms of the whole history of the elites going to university. It wasn't that everybody went. Now it's almost everybody goes. But I've counseled my children, if you don't want to go to those places, I am perfectly fine. Because of knowing what I experienced, and that I had to unlearn most of it anyway, and I was in debt and I had to pay it back, took X number of years. Is that the right path for you? You really got to want it and understand what you're going into. And I think parents like yourself also are talking to their kids about it. You really got to do it. It's not just for liberal arts and partying.
Absolutely. But Robert, as you know, because you've got children too, kids are going to find their own way and make their own mistakes. And you can talk to them as much as you want, and they may or may not, you know, follow
of course,
along. And
yeah.
Sometimes what they do is the opposite of what you do, you know. So my kids, to get back at me, they love to eat junk food.
Oh, no, they didn't. See, you know, it's interesting because I know you're aware of dietary choices are better. What we did, and people ask me this all the time, how do you get your kids to eat clean, organic food? It's like, well, first of all, that's all we ever had. That's all they ever had. And when they wanted to go out with their friends, I'd say, you know what? If they offer you food, try it. See how it makes you feel. And they get sick and they're like, I don't think that's good. And I never had the opportunity to learn that lesson until much later in life. So they made the choices based on their own choices. And I agree, we have to respect their upbringing so they learn things. But I remember, and I've told this story many times, my daughter, I think she was about 4 years of age, and she would go to a friend's house at that age. You know, you'd have play dates and things, and the moms would say, "Here, you want some cookies or something?" And she'd say, "Is it organic?" At four. And then the parents were like, "Well," and then some of them would say, "Yes." And then she would say, let me see the box. Cause she almost the first word she learned to read was organic. And, yet now again, at 16 and my son is 22, of course they've had the freedom to make other choices and they do, but they're very sensitive to what their bodies tell them. And I said, I wish I had known that. I probably wouldn't have been as sick in my young life, but again, this is how we learn so that I can do what I do out in the world to try and teach people to do things I've learned and better.
So it sounds like you and I had a similar experience because I grew up, you know, eating Fruit Loops and yes, Pop-Tarts and
totally.
Boyardee and you know, and having a lot of stomach problems and having to take antibiotics and being plagued with allergies and asthma yeah. as a kid. And it's interesting because both my husband and I had allergies as children and we have four children and none of them had any allergies for their whole childhood. My oldest daughter has a little bit of hay fever now, but didn't ever have it when they should have been sort of genetically predisposed to it. But like for me, being interested in food, reading the labels, you know, really pushing out that message, which is really a radical, I know not in the circles that you run in, Robert, but to tell people to eat real food is like one of the most radical things that you can tell someone to do.
Isn't that crazy? It is. It's real bizarre. I know. But
we're not eating food, and go into the home of any mainstream or even slightly crunchy doctor in America and go look in their on their shelves and go look in their refrigerator and you'll get the answer to why so many Americans are so sick right there on the pantry shelf.
Which is the great disappointment I have for allopathic medicine. Didn't know it growing up, right? Thought that was the way to go, but not one doctor I ever met asked my parents when I was a kid with all the sickness I had, well, what are you guys eating, right? You know what? How are your bowel movements? I was hospitalized with constipation as a child. That's how bad my bowel movements were. And you know, the funny story is that my dad worked for the CB Fleet Pharmaceutical Company. So I'm sure we got free enemas, you know, save some money on the bills. But that was before I was like, whoa, what are you doing? Now they want to anal swab everybody. It's got crazy, just outrageous.
Actually, Beijing has gone back to using those anal swabs. So
yes.
Right. 2 weeks before the Olympics, they've announced that they're doing that testing because it's more accurate than the nasal swabs.
You can't make it up, which proves my point, what I've been saying from the beginning. The COVID tests are crap. Mm-hmm. they were that way, and they are that way even today. Yeah.
Now they're literally crap. That was
exactly
a good pun.
Exactly. Oh, Jennifer, now the name Margulis, I remember from, you know, when I was doing a lot of research early on in my homeopathic career and reading books voraciously, one of the names I came across in one of the great books I read was by Lynn Margulis. And you mentioned a lot of relatives in terms of writing and research and such. Was there any relation to Lynn?
Yeah. So Lynn Margulis was my mom.
Oh, no. I had no idea. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. One of the most impactful.
I'm glad that you're saying that because the book that I'm writing right now that's overdue is actually a book about her life and her science. And,
oh,
you know, she
gosh.
Was a preeminent microbiologist and she grew up on the south side of Chicago. And when she was 16 years old, she met the astronomer Carl Sagan, who was 19. They got married when she was 19. And they had their first child, which is my oldest brother, when she was 21. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people have heard of Carl Sagan and a lot fewer people have heard of Lynn Margulis. But of course, theories are so important right now to everything that's going on in the world and in science today.
Yeah, well, your family lineage in science is amazing to me. I understand that the what we call the incarnations of people, souls that come together. And your family and your mom, I had no idea because that was one of the most formative books that I read in my early years as a homeopath. I'm like, I'm so impressed. I can't wait to read the book about your mom from your perspective, too. That's amazing.
I can't wait for that book to be ready for you to read, Robert.
Oh, please. I'm ready. Come on. Let's end the show now so you can get back to it. No, I don't want to end the show now. It's great to finally have you on board here. Jennifer, you again. I'm just what I'm learning here about you is I don't know how these things escape. We went to the same university. I don't know if we were there at the same time or not. But it's kind of wild, the whole history here. And of course, our backgrounds in terms of allergies and things. And you point out the very thing I point out about my kids, no chronic diseases, no allergies. It's like, wait a second. I was chronically ill. I was a poster boy for every allergy known to man. My wife, chronically ill, vaccine injured, mercury toxic. We had all kinds of ailments. She had all kinds of ailments. And how is it that our kids, one generation down, because we cleaned up our act the best we could, and look at the correction that nature can make if we do diligently what we now learn is, hey, it matters what you eat, right? It matters whether stuff is pollution coming into you, right? Airborne, foodborne, waterborne, etc. And also, what can we do to accelerate the cleansing of the bodies, right, that have been gunked up and accumulated?
I'll tell you a funny story. Well, maybe not a funny story, but my daughter, a couple of years ago, so we have four children, and my youngest is 12 years old, and she went to a sleepaway camp. She was very excited to go, and it's really far away in Sisters, Oregon, and I had to drive her about an hour and a half to the bus, and, you know, we get there, and there are these nice young counselors who are checking everybody in, and they said, okay, great, where's her medication? And I said, she doesn't have any medication, and they said, well, what is she allergic to? And I said, well, she's not allergic to anything. And they said, well, what medication is she allergic to? And I said, well, I don't know, because she's never taken any medication, so right now, that's sort of fill it out as not applicable. And this other mom was right behind me with a younger child. Mm-hmm. And she literally, for less than 1 week of camp, she handed the counselor these two huge bags full of prescription medications. And the mom was just looking at me sort of flabbergasted with her jaw open. And she said, she said something like, wow, you're so lucky. And, I could just see this like kind of feeling of grief on her face because her daughter was dealing with so many chronic problems. And that is not to blame parents, Robert, because it is not the parents' fault. We are in a system that makes money and profits on our poor health. So the less healthy your child is, the more doctors, the more big pharma stays in business. And it's a fundamental conflict of interest, which is something I explore in one of my books, which is called Your Baby, Your Way, about how our parenting decisions are really influenced in all the wrong ways by for-profit medicine. And I think that parents can sometimes hear that and say, well, what's wrong with me? My kid has had an antibiotic every 3 months. And it's not what's wrong with you. It's that we're in a system that's broken that needs to be fixed.
Yeah. And I don't blame my mom and dad. Mom's here watching right now. She's like, go, go. She's almost 88 on the 29th of January. That's this Saturday. 88. And she's been through, the traditional allopathic medicine originally from Israel and came to America. And I would say, if anybody wants to give my mom a gift for her birthday, get her book, which is on Amazon too. Life of Many Colors, her, my journey from Israel to America. It's fascinating what she's seen in her lifetime. She's lived through history. This is the thing. We only know what we know when we know it. And I always urge people to have compassion, including for those that have gotten the jabs, the experimental injections now, which is a big point of contention in our society, the divisiveness, the division based on the fear of the germ once again, this whole basis that has corrupted our ability to think critically about the world around us and the world within us, that if indeed germs were the killers that we were told that they are, then nobody would be alive. No animals, no humans, because we're more microbe than man or woman, and that's a reality. And then we get into issues of virological discussion in the virome, and oh man, it gets even weirder what we've just believe because we've been told because the experts have said it, and you start pushing back. You're like, oh no, you're the crazy people. But now we're finding, and like with the big event yesterday in DC, and I just watched Senator Ron Johnson had a hearing in his own at the Senate today with a lot of those same people, but all doctors, scientists, researchers, and everything coming to the same conclusion finally about these things, that they're not operating on science anymore or scientific principle. They are actually defying it for another purpose. Now, we could say, as you point out, economic conflicts of interest or population reduction goals due to other economic imperatives as well. But this is very important to understand. So it's not in the realm of conspiracy. It's in the realm of criticality in terms of what has transpired over decades, maybe even centuries, to lead us to this point.
Absolutely. I mean, it's so hard to tease these things out, isn't it? And everybody, I tend to think this is where you and I are probably totally different. So we can take off our gloves and start punching at each other. But, you know, I always want to see the best in everyone. I always want to believe that even these talking heads, oh, I see the crease in the forehead already.
I love it. I love the punch because I want to see the best in everyone. I just recognize that we all have the ability to make, let's say, I'll just say it nicely, really poor decisions. I've screwed up in my life, right? But I can't excuse the behavior in the midst of when it harms somebody else, right? So we got to call them out on what they're doing. Yet still, I urge compassion for those people that have been programmed as I was programmed.
So I have a very close family member who called me crazy, who said I was lying, used the word lies 3 times in this rant. And, you know, this particular family member was very upset because I was sharing CDC data. So I was sharing peer-reviewed science and CDC data to make the point that these experimental jabs are not as safe as we've been told. I mean, the fact that we have over 22,000 reported deaths directly following the vaccine, and that I actually know 2 people personally who died within 6 hours after getting the vaccine, a 32-year-old young man who wanted to get it so that he could travel. And then one of my neighbors who got the first shot and then died, and she was 80 years old, but she never went back for the second shot because she died within that window, like just about a week or two later. And I asked every single one of our mutual friends, we have lots, oh, do you think this vaccine has anything to do with it? And they said, oh, no, definitely not, nothing. So one of those deaths was, it's on the death certificate. It was absolutely confirmed. The other death is one of that has not been reported. But because I talked about this with a family member, they got very upset with me and they said I was a liar and I'm crazy. And the truth is, like, coming from that amount of fear and upset, and then said to me at the end of the conversation, we never can talk about this again. I want you to agree that you will never bring this subject up with me again. And I said, when in your entire life have you said it's not okay to talk about something? But I said, absolutely, we don't have to talk about it. And throughout the whole, you know, COVID craziness, I have been asking this family member to talk to me and to talk about science. And the same person said, I won't talk to you about science because I'm not going to win that debate. And I thought, I didn't know it was about winning or losing. I thought it was about sharing information. I always want to be willing to change my mind. When I know better, I want to do better. And I want to be open-minded enough that when I find information that makes me deeply uncomfortable, that creates cognitive dissonance, that instead of killing the messenger, which is what my family has done,
right.
I actually open my mind and I try to integrate and understand and grapple with the information. But what I was trying to say before was just that I know a lot of doctors, a lot of holistic-minded doctors, but I also know a lot of conventional mainstream doctors. And I will say that I don't think a single one of them, and I know this is going to sound really naive, but the older I get, Robert, the more naive I become. I don't know a single one of them who isn't genuinely, sincerely believing that they are giving people the best advice, doing the best they can, and trying to promote health. So even the doctors who I know are doing it wrong and who are seeing poor outcomes in their practices, yeah, I believe that they are doing it from a place of genuinely wanting to be healers. And like I said, I know that's a naive point of view, but
you know, I don't know that it's naive, but I would just say to that, their sincerity is killing people. You know, so
and that's what they would say to you, right? That's what they would say to me. That's what my family members said. My family members said, you are dangerous. Your ideas are killing people. So when I tell people to get outside and exercise, to make sure they optimize their vitamin D levels, preferably through sunshine, to make love as often as they can in a mutually consensual way, to eat real food. When I tell people that, apparently I'm dangerous and I'm killing people.
Right.
You know, that's what they're saying about us, and that's what we're saying about them. So it's easy to generalize when you're in an echo chamber, and I like to try to get out of the echo chamber and actually have true dialogue, which is something that's missing from our society today.
Yeah, I understand. But the, I don't mean but the,
and
the delusions, right? The cognitive dissonance, of course, is quite obvious. At that point, it's very difficult to have a human interaction, right? Even one where you can disagree but still be pals, which I enjoy. I've got plenty of people that I disagree with that are best buds of mine, and it's okay. And I try to encourage people to say, we got to get past those differences. It's just a matter, I think, fundamentally, do they support our freedom? to communicate.
Yes.
Right. And when they don't, then it's like there's nowhere to go.
But even, right. And do they support communicate? I mean, let's not even start about freedom to communicate, but let's just start about, like, do they support having a dialogue with someone? Yeah. But, you know, I'll tell you.
Oh, hold on. We got to take a break. I apologize for our friends at Brighteon.tv. They got a 2.5 minute break and Super Don didn't remind me. I don't know why, but I'm throwing him under the bus. All right. Stand by. More with Jennifer Margulis after this break. Okay, we can talk behind the scenes now because
Brighteon.tv,
they're flexible. Okay, all right. Yeah. I was like, I'm loving the conversation, Jennifer. That's why it's like it's easier to lose track and then Super Don, I don't know what he was doing. He's usually busy.
I was listening. I was
into it too. So he's got a good excuse as well. Anyway, no, truly adore you and love the discussion. I think this is so important to do. So by all means.
I want to tell you when we come back, I hope I'll remember. I want to tell you this story about a doctor in our community. Well, in my former community.
And Super Don, you got to tell me when everybody comes back so we can join in progress. In the meantime, we can keep chatting. So that is the coolest thing about your mom and how I didn't miss that. I'd be like,
I'm so glad that you said that because I'm in trouble. In fact, I'm feeling guilty for doing any media when I should be just writing the book. And my editor is so frustrated with me because I'm usually very on time person and I'm quite behind.
Well, you know what? Your editor can say you can only do one show from now on, the Robert Scott Bell Show, because he reminds you that you need to complete that book.
Yes. Oh. It's been quite a ride. I mean, our publisher has been bought twice now, I think.
They're not playing the break.
And I've had
they're not playing the break? Okay. Well, we thought we were on break with Brighteon.tv. Apparently, they haven't gone to break. So let me know if they do. Monitor the feed. And we've got Jennifer Margulis on and just having a great discussion with her, catching up on years of not being connected. A lot of our history is very similar in some sense. And what we've gone through from a health challenge, medical-wise, conclusions we've come to. I sure hope that I don't come off as a mean ogre trying to yell and scream at people that disagree with me about this. Because I urge compassion, but you know, I also recognize as we were going to that point where we're going to come back to about communication. And again, my reason for being in a big way is about freedom, right? Those who oppose freedom, that's the line that draws. If they try to force me to do something I don't want to do, or you know, prohibit me from doing something I want to do, that's where, because those people that I disagree with, I support them in their choice, even if I disagree with it. And I think that's a fundamental, you know, human level of dignity that you have. Look, we can disagree and you want to do that. I'll try to inform you. I'll engage in debate with you about what I believe, but ultimately the decision is yours. I'm not going to use the power of government to stop you from making a mistake that I perceive as a mistake. Don't use the power of government to stop me from making a mistake that you perceive as a mistake.
How do you counter the argument that your right to freedom stops when it becomes harmful to me, right? The idea is like you don't have the freedom not to put a seatbelt on your child, for example. Right. What do you say to that?
Look, in our generation, Jennifer, seatbelts were something we looked at, we didn't wear, right? We were standing up in cars. We were standing up in the back of pickup trucks and somehow we lived. Now, that's not to say we couldn't have been harmed or could have been killed. Man, I was jumping things on my bike without a helmet. The same point is their argument right now is about a false theory or paradigm, a belief system that germs coming from me by virtue of my very breathing will somehow kill them or kill somebody else. We know it's a false belief, but the perspective there is a very libertarian one, excuse me, that you don't have a right to harm me in the action of, you know, your rights, you're exerting your rights, but if your rights violate my rights, but then we have a perspective on rights that we have to get to, right? Do I have a right to breathe freely, or do I, because you're afraid of germs, do I have to now live in isolation and cover my mouth in I would call it a satanic ritual in that sense. So now we get into a belief system, like one religion trying to dominate another, because my perception of their belief in science is actually more cult-like devotion and religious-like, rather than, hey, here's all the data that shows that your breathing is a deadly event, and therefore you must teach your children that, on and on. So it's a difficult one because they don't have that perception and they're quite offended when you point out that they're arguing a belief, not a valid scientific, you know, kind of, here's the thing and here it is. Everybody agrees. Oh, consensus. That's democracy. Two oncologists and a homeopath voting on what to do for your cancer, right? That the homeopath never gets a say. You know, that democracy's dangerous.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, you know, now in New York City, of course, you know, but anyone over the age of 5 is no longer welcome in public spaces if they can't show proof of having a for-profit, liability-free pharmaceutical product. So when did we become a society that believes that you are dirty, you are unclean, you are sick and still until proven healthy? And in order to be proven healthy, you have to take a for-profit pharmaceutical that has minted 9 billionaire new billionaires. I mean, that's where the thinking really starts to break down. And then when you call people out on their cognitive dissonance, like, I don't think it's for the good of humanity or for any American, you know, society or a free and fair democracy, to whether democracy is good or bad is another conversation, but you know, to make 5-year-olds feel that they are dirty vectors of disease.
Yeah.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
J&M Jewelry provides online jewelry appraisals that are convenient, secure, and affordable. Appraisals are usually completed within 48 hours and sent directly to your email. Contact us today or visit our website to use our appraisal request form. J&MJewelry.com.
This was made possible by Brighteon.com. After being deplatformed by YouTube, I built Brighteon.com so that we can speak. All voices of dissent are welcome. Join Brighteon.com now. Post your videos today and start building an audience there where you will not be censored. Brighteon.com.
The Kelly Key easily converts your AR rifle to bolt action, allowing you to keep the rifle you love in assault weapon jurisdictions. The Kelly Key is a true fast drop-in solution. No permanent changes to your rifle. Import, transport, own, and have fun with your AR. Why the Kelly Key? Because a bolt action is not an assault weapon. Stay future ready from gun bans with the Kelly Key. The Kelly Key also lets you quickly and easily build your ideal hunting rifle, lets you build a quiet and suppressed rifle, and benefits your long-range precision shooting. Available now at KellyKey.com with free shipping.
The world we once knew is collapsing.
There is no doubt that water is good for you.
And our political leaders are deliberately shutting down pipelines, fuel refineries, nuclear power plants, and energy exploration.
It's growing in popularity. But what's the difference between hydrogen water and plain water?
While financial assets are plummeting in value,
let's dive deeper into the molecular makeup of plain water. Water molecules have one part oxygen and two parts hydrogen.
You need more.
And when they combine, the two molecules turn into a liquid. But what makes hydrogen water different?
Echo
machines are designed to dissolve more hydrogen gas into your water, making your normal water into hydrogen water with no pH change. In contrast to plain water, you can see that we now have H2O molecules as well as two parts hydrogen gas. These additional H2 molecules are unbonded and remain in gas form.
So why is it better to have hydrogen gas dissolved in your water?
Hundreds of scientific studies, including the studies by medical gas research on hydrogen-rich water, have helped us understand that there are many biological advantages of drinking hydrogen water, such as neurological benefits that help improve brain function and boost energy throughout the day. In addition to these benefits, dissolved molecular hydrogen have been shown to reduce oxidative stress and inflammation, which are the leading causes of disease. Now you can drink with confidence, knowing the difference between hydrogen water and plain water. Like and follow Synergy Science to stay up to date with the latest news on hydrogen water and other ways to achieve your health advantage.
Only after it passes our tests do we encapsulate it and package it for our audience. You can find it at BrighteonStore.com. It's not the cheapest vitamin C on the market, but it is by far the most rigorously tested and honestly sourced vitamin C.
Rocking the health world through the power of radio.
Support your health.
It's the Robert Scott Bell Show.
Of course, we're seeing the fallout in the most horrifying way. I mean, we're seeing such an upsurge in suicide rates in the youngest people. We're talking about 10, 11, 12-year-olds who no longer want to be part of the planet because of what's been happening. In my opinion, there are many reasons, of course, but one of the main ones is the way that adults have been treating our children by restricting their breath, by making them feel unclean, by terrifying them. And who wants to wake up every day in a state of total fear and cortisol spikes?
Now I know there's a chance. Yeah, no, this is different. You know, we've certainly lived in a pharmaceutical church world for a long time. It just hasn't been overtly obvious to everybody, unless you've been through what I've been through or you've been through in terms of being raised pharmaceutically and having been on antibiotics almost all the time when you were growing up, and all the things that you realize, whoa, even if they meant well, which they did, I don't dispute that. The devastation to my body was very real, and the things I had to overcome was an arduous task to do. And I'm not complaining about it, even though I complained to God when I was suffering. God, why me, right? As I prayed for healing. And it wasn't a magic, miraculous lightning bolt from the sky, which I said, God, that'd be okay. I'd love that. I'd be just imagine, snap your fingers and I'm well. I had to really work hard to get there. And it was good because I was founded in principles of applying those principles in healing that are almost time immemorial and age old, although applying them in new ways that I didn't know, like homeopathically or otherwise. So it was a strengthening to do that. Now, not everybody wakes up and realizes it, and they continue on the road of big pharma until they die. Now it's just changed because rather than having at least some semblance of limited freedom to choose these things, it's become more totalitarian by the day, where even now the doctors are learning this, I guess, the hard way from their own system, which is why my dearly departed Uncle Bob, medical doctor from Connecticut at the time, or he's from New York and then Connecticut, I would visit him when I was a kid, and we just had a great time. And he would say, you don't want to do this, because he knew my spirit. It's like, of course, Uncle Bob, I want to be a doctor like you. What are you talking about? No, you don't. And I didn't understand it until many years later, that if I grew up and went through that training and did what the doctors did to me to anybody else, I would be miserable. It would break my spirit. And so this is the thing I had to learn through living, right? We learn through living. And our friends that are living in cognitive dissonance, or family members living in cognitive dissonance, we can't protect them from their dissonance. They are even violently opposed to us even bringing up the dissonance. So we've just got to love them. If you pray for them, but be ready when they do wake up, and don't be mad at them because they woke up late. But to love them as you love them. And you know, that's the difficulty right now in a lot of the anger and discord is, I don't mean that they don't mean well. I don't argue that.
It's satellite-based text.
Yeah, well, I mean, the proof is in the pudding, right? And any good doctor is going to look at their practice outcomes, and if they have terrible outcomes and they see that they have patients who keep getting sick and aren't getting well, a good doctor is going to change the way they do business. But the problem is, I mean, those doctors are few and far between. You mentioned having my co-author, Dr. Paul Thomas, on the show. He and I wrote the Vaccine Friendly Plan together, and he was trained very conventionally, went to Dartmouth Medical School, did everything wrong in a way, by the, you know, doing every single vaccine, giving kids Tylenol, which you should absolutely never do ever, period, end stop, but you also should never do it before or after a vaccine, prescribing round after round of antibiotics. And when I first told Dr. Paul that my children had never had an antibiotic, because not a single one had any antibiotics until my oldest child went behind my back and decided to get a prescription for acne. Mm. And that was when she was 15 years old. But before that, and I, you know, I still have two out of four have still never needed or wanted, or the other one had them because she jumped into a river and didn't gauge the depth of it, because that's what teenagers do, and got a huge gash. And I told her we could fix that without the antibiotics. But her sister was like, no, you need antibiotics. But in any case, when I told Dr. Paul that my kids had never had an antibiotic, he looked at me like he was looking at a dog with three heads. I mean, it was almost like he hadn't even heard of it. And he changed. He realized that his outcomes were terrible, that he was mirroring the horrible outcomes that we have among today's children in his own clinical practice. And he started listening to parents and seeing what was going wrong, and changed his practice so that his patients would be healthy. But the problem is, when you're a doctor with healthy patients, you basically work yourself out of a job. We would need so many fewer doctors if everybody had kids as healthy as yours and mine, right?
Yeah. And thanks for softening up Dr. Thomas. By the time we met and I told him that, he wasn't shocked at all. He's like, of course. Like, by that time, it was no big deal. I was like, I thought that was kind of cool. No, it's not cool. I know that. Right. But Paul's
I've been moving him kicking and screaming towards a more sort of holistic, like people like J.B. Hanley. I don't know if you've ever had him on the show. Hanley, who wrote, you know, How to End the Autism Epidemic. He just says, God, Jennifer, she's just such a hippie. Which is funny, because I make a point of sort of dressing in a nice, you know, three-piece suit or whatever when I'm giving talks and everything, and I try to mask it. But even though I'm not wearing the flare tie pants and the long earrings, I guess my hippiness just comes out anyway. So
Well, you know, crunchy granola, if it's organic, it's all right. You know what else I was thinking of? What's happened in the last couple of years, the what we call corona crazy or COVID crazy. I am witnessing, because I'm meeting weekly with medical doctors and nurses. We have these freedom events, medical freedom discussions. I have never seen the allopathic community so open to these options that you and I have engaged in much of our lives at the point when we woke up and started it. To speak homeopathy, nobody's blinking. They're going, I want to learn. To talk about the herbs, to talk about the supplements, to be, you know, even talking about the protocols where they're integrating things with their drugs and saying, you know what, y'all are doing great, 100% success. I'm not going to argue with that, but I'm also getting that success and I'm not using any of those drugs. They're like, oh, really? I want to know that too. So there is a side benefit to these tragedies, these difficult challenges we go through. And as I say that in my own life, my challenges, my most difficult challenges with my health led me to know what I know to do what I do. So I don't think this is happening to us, but happening for us. That's my, you know, outlook on life, that God doesn't say abandon us. It's like this is all orchestrated for our benefit. Now, it's still our choice as to what way we go with this. But I am so encouraged by those doctors and nurses that probably would look at me with, you know, screwy eyes or some kind because of what I do. Or, you know, now they say, I want to learn from you. And I'm not coming in as an elitist. I appreciate what they know. And I love the collegiality. And I think that's the solving of this mess, is that all physicians of all backgrounds, doctors of all trainings come together and share and do the best by their patients. And that's where I say the sincerity of those people is coming through, but they have been now persecuted and prosecuted from their own profession because they're willing to do this. And I think that has to change, or that system crumbles and we set up a new system like Buckminster Fuller suggested.
Or, you know, they're trying to fly under the radar. I mean, I got the story I was going to tell you before we were supposed to take a break, but we didn't.
Yes.
Was that I got a call from a doctor who's somebody I've known for a really long time and who was on the phone crying and said something like, you know, I denounced you. And I said, what do you mean? And this doctor said, you know, my patients asked me to write a letter to the legislature against medical freedom. I didn't think that people should have it. And I thought that the work that you were doing, because I've always been a vaccine choice person. I have always choices in childbirth, choices in medicine. And it's not about legislating or forcing. And I would say that too for the other side. Like, I don't believe I'm, you know, a nice controversial example would be that I'm Jewish and I'm very against circumcision, because there is no medical reason to cut off one of the most, you know, private and erogenous parts of a small baby's penis, right within a few hours of their birth. And so, but I would never say we should legislate it and force parents not to do it. And, you know, that's an interesting debate that is probably for another time. But the point that you need to have choices. And so this doctor said to me, you know, I'm so sorry. And I was, but also said, I was trying to help my patients, and I thought that that was right, because that doctor believes that if you do not tense, if you do not follow the CDC vaccination schedule, that you are abusing a child, and was able to see, you know, in front of their own eyes that, you know, the thicker the packet of the, because using not electronic records, the thicker the packet of the file, the sicker the child is, and not making the connection that every single time a parent brings a child to the doctor for a quote unquote well child or well baby check, they're leaving with a child whose immune system and whose brain is becoming more and more compromised. And that's so painful. I mean, this particular person is going through so much cognitive dissonance, is looking it squarely in the face, is staying below the radar because they're afraid of losing their license. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, but is also waking up, and the waking up is very exciting. I agree with that.
It is. And of course, going back to our shared Jewish heritage as well, you know, a lot of controversies regarding the Holocaust, for instance. We talk about the things that led up to it, you know, decades, in fact, that set the stage for what transpired as Nazi Germany. And those that are pointing those things out, similarities today, are being accused of hijacking, for instance, a unique event that's not unique in human history, but certainly for the Jewish people primarily, you know, almost it's like a sacred cow. You can't even mention it in a reference point to learn from history. But my point is, I was always told never forget, Yad Vashem, that history will repeat if you forget. So to bring up modern day examples of things that lead to a similar path is an important thing to do. But again, these people are just following orders too. And that's problematic because in the Nuremberg trial, it came to the code that that was not a legitimate excuse for doing the things that resulted in atrocities, for instance. And so that's an uncomfortable place to be. And Del Bigtree laid it out in the final of yesterday's event in D.C. and to stop the mandates. And now his accusers in the mainstream media of like, oh, how dare he bring that up? And they go to somebody who's in a Holocaust museum to say that was bad, that was wrong. And so I just think that, again, shutting down discussion by saying there are certain things you can't say or can't talk about is also, you know, a problematic place for those that are trying to control us. But I think they're losing their grip on that.
I think they are too. And interestingly, those Holocaust museums are now saying, like the one in Illinois that says you're not allowed to enter the Holocaust museum if you don't show proof of vaccination. I mean, that they can't understand the irony there. Show me your papers. You have to wear, you know, a Jewish star and you're only allowed in certain spaces. I mean, what all discrimination ends when it has to do with COVID or it has to do with vaccines. Like my dear friend's son has cerebral palsy and has obstructed airways, and he cannot wear a mask for medical reasons, and he is being actively discriminated against in the co-op in Ashland, Oregon, this beautiful space full of organic food where they will not let him in the door because he has a medical exemption and he cannot wear a mask. And that kind of discrimination is okay. We're going to discriminate against severely disabled and handicapped people all of a sudden because of COVID or because of science with a capital S that all of a sudden isn't science at all. It's just social conformity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And most disappointing, our friends and family in Israel and their willingness to be sold out to, ironically, the demon spawn of IG Farben in Pfizer, right? That they when they broke up the IG Farben into all these little subunits, and now they've come back and they're like, yeah, let's experiment on the Jews again. And the Jewish government, the leaders of the government going, yeah, let's sell our people out. And then we'll make them wear certain things to say they're safe to come in the shopping mall. It's like, if it's that easy to cause a people that have been so persecuted for thousands of years and almost eradicated, less than 100 years ago, are we vulnerable if they erase history and rewrite it within our lifetime? You bet we are. Witness Israel, what's happened here. Now, there's going to be a wake-up call there as well, I believe, but it says that we cannot get cocky. We cannot go to sleep on this. We have to be diligent in our, let's say, if not embracing history, but certainly preserving it and pushing back on all of those who are erasing it or even knocking down monuments because they're offensive. It's like, what can we learn from those monuments about the time that was in? We can learn a lot rather than, oh, we have to erase history because it offends us. That's another element of what's happening now.
Yeah, you can't pretend things didn't exist or they didn't happen. And I mean, it's interesting because the CDC that's supposed to be bringing us, you know, great health is also the same organization that brought us diethylstilbestrol. And most people don't know what that is, but that was a synthetic hormone that was given to pregnant women and to prevent abortion, right? To prevent spontaneous miscarriage. And there was a husband-wife team at Harvard University, of all places, that said they did a totally bogus study, and they said that diethylstilbestrol would make a healthy pregnancy healthier. And it turned out that, so people are saying, oh, this is safe, this is effective. And so if a doctor said that you should get it, you would say, well, is it safe? And they'd say, sure. Well, it took until those children exposed in utero to diethylstilbestrol became teenagers to find out that it was causing an aggressive and fast-growing cancer that killed literally thousands of people who were given, whose mother was given that drug. And so this idea that we would say that it's safe to give this vaccine to pregnant women, not only to say that it's safe, but that we're actually pushing it. The CDC is actively, very aggressively pushing it. When we know you should always be the most careful with women during gestation, and that a tiny baby that's growing in utero is most susceptible to toxins and vulnerabilities and assaults, right? To say that we know it's safe when we don't have at least 15 years of safety data is to absolutely forget that the CDC also condoned diethylstilbestrol and then had to do a complete about face and eat humble pie and clean up for years and years and years. And we still see some of the third generation problems with children exposed to diethylstilbestrol. It just drives me crazy that we forget about history, because history, like you said, is such an important teacher.
Well, and also in the early and mid 2000s, the revelation out of the CDC thanks to the work of Brian Hooker and others, revealing the studies of you know, African-American males getting the MMR on time or early, and it manifesting at a significantly higher rate of autism diagnosis. And, you know, there's a racial construct there as well. And yet so many are saying, hey, the CDC is a legitimate organization. You should just follow what they say. And I think what's happening here, Jennifer, is the wake up happens in the most brutal of ways when it needs to. And the physician community, the nursing community, that I agree for the vast, vast majority of them went in for the right reasons, really are trying to help people. Yet they were trained in a certain way that certainly limited the scope of questioning and other things. Now are finally coming to that realization that you may have. Certainly I did growing up, and I've been broadcasting about, not because I hate doctors. In fact, I thought doctors would hate me for bringing it up, but quietly some of my best friends were some of the top doctors and are in the world. They were quietly cheerleading me on. Please, Robert, I tell people to listen to your show because I can't say what you say or else I'd get in trouble, right? And so that's the point of the integrity within the community, doing their best in a difficult situation. Now, that doesn't excuse those that know better and don't do better. That's a whole different discussion. But right now, they are becoming acutely aware of the danger of their own profession, and those that are in it for the right reasons, that are willing to step up and say it, are going to come out of this and they'll still be respected and there'll be a place for them. But those that don't are going to be rightly of their own accord denigrating themselves, and they're not going to be able to buy a patient because who would go there?
I mean, the doctor that I was telling you about before is someone who's incredibly successful and who was sort of the number one vaccinator in their area, as you know, based on all of the extra that they were getting from the insurance companies, and now is going to completely change. Asked me to give a copy of our book, The Vaccine Friendly Plan, said that, you know, they have so many patients that they can make change from the inside out. They're doing it quietly and they're doing it under the radar, but I do think that that's happening more and more. Like you said, allopathic doctors who have only benefited from the system, have never had a reason to question it, have kept their blinders on, are ripping those blinders off now because it's just too egregious. There's just too many problems. We're just in too much of a mess.
Oh yeah,
which maybe is a good thing, even though it feels so incredibly painful right now.
Like I see the benefits already happening from within it. Not often do we recognize it at that time. And like I didn't see in my own life, Jennifer, about my suffering at the time that it was actually happening for my benefit. Mm-hmm. The more we can shorten that timeline in terms of our suffering and recognizing why and how and the benefit, the faster we can get through this, and the faster also we can come to levels of appreciation about the experience we're all going through. At one point, we look back and went, remember those sucky years of COVID? It actually, like, wow, it really woke up, us up culturally as well in so many ways, to find ways to work together rather than having animosity among, you know, this is the pathway through that. We've got to be it's got to become a festering wound to go, oh, it's really there. It's not like hiding, right? Now it's out. Now we've got to find a way to heal.
When my family is willing to talk to me again, then I'll agree with, I love your optimism and I think you're right. And it's hard to remember when you're in the midst of such difficult struggle and you've been canceled from, you know, everything basically because you're somehow unclean and untouchable. So I'm looking forward to the day when we can sit down and have these conversations across the aisle, so to speak, at least for me, with my own much beloved and very misled family members, you know?
Well, send them over to me. I'll be happy to talk with them. Set them right. No, that might not be good.
Live right on the air and see how that goes.
Oh my gosh, that'll be crazy. So you're a refugee from Ashland, Oregon. And it's funny, my wife and I, when we were in Florida thinking about, we were kind of getting the sense we needed to move and we didn't know where to go. I was looking at Ashland because it was like so beautiful, so much organic food. I found my first organic pizza place years ago there. I don't even know it's still there. And Super Don, of course.
Wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. Super Don, you know, remember I visited because you were in, where was it, Medford at the time, right?
Right.
Which is all in that area. And yet come to find out that those people that I align with in terms of diet and lifestyle in a lot of ways almost became the cheerleader for this authoritarian medical state, as you said, like the Ashland Co-op, which is an amazing place with great food and all that. And yet they are the almost enforcers of the state, which is like used to be the left was the don't trust the government and the pharmaceutical companies. Now they become again the policemen and women for these things. So it's kind of weird. So you left Ashland, and did you find a place?
Yeah, I mean, the thing, it's baffling to me, and it's so disappointing because I mean, I used to be like a walking advertisement for Ashland, Oregon. It's 15 miles from the California border. My son is still there finishing his last semester of high school. And, you know, it's a beautiful place full of people who care about healthy food and exercise and organic living. And it has become one of the worst places on the planet, more dictatorial and totalitarian, people shaking their fingers at each other and saying, no, no, you can't do that. You have to comply, which is just like how Israel has responded. It's really shocking and disappointing, Robert, but it's what it is.
Well, you know, Jennifer, what's not shocking and disappointing is you and your first appearance on the Robert Scott Bell Show. I hope we have a lot more appearances with you. It's been fun. In the meantime, this weekend, Saturday, our 29th of January, my mom's 88th birthday, we're going to do the next AMA for our Patreon supporters. And by the way, up at Patreon, our interview with Chris Exley is up there now, the video interview that you heard this weekend. The power to heal is yours.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Robert Scott Bell Show.
Thank you.